Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Don't steal my dinos. Those are my dinos. I don't know. What's the sound of air? I don't have a pirate ship in my house.
Let's just paint a picture for you here of what's going on with El Señor Bolas's plan.
He is my precious, and I will feed him crackers.
That kind of locks your opponent out of the game. Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for news, brews, and lore in the Magic community. I'm your host, Sean. I'm joined with my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
It's doing good today.
Wonderful. Well, we have a wonderful show lined up for you today. So much stuff to talk about. But we also want to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where you can go and order your Magic singles or sealed product, and be sure to use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps for orders over $10, and it'll save you 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. Now, Greg, we just had a new year. We moved from 2017 to 2018. And what do people do when they move from one year to the other?
Make resolutions.
They make resolutions. Absolutely. So before we really get into this episode, I wanted to give a New Year's resolution for our podcast. So,
yeah. Is this a good thing?
It is. I mean, goals.
Okay.
Right? Hashtag podcast goals.
Oh, man, that's a good goal.
There you go. So my goal for 2018 for the Win Condition podcast is I want to interview somebody on our podcast, either from Wizards or a prominent member of the MTG community. I think that would be fascinating. It would be exciting. It would be a great experience for us and the cast and our listeners. I'd be very excited to get anybody on board here who we can talk to, pick their brain a little bit, either about the game of Magic or about their Magic experiences. So that's my
what they really like about Magic. Why do they do this?
Exactly. So Greg, do you have a New Year's resolution for us?
My resolution is I would like to provide enough content for you guys, the listeners, to be able to generate revenue through things like YouTube or other sources, so we can actually do more giveaways for you guys.
I think that's a great goal. I know that we have a YouTube channel, and we said we were going to be getting better this year about posting content, and we will. And you know, we want you guys to get value out of our content. So whether you just like to listen to the podcast, whether you like to watch our gameplay videos on YouTube, or even listen to the podcast on YouTube, we would love to be able to bring you enough content and value for you to feel right about yourselves if you were to give us, you know, maybe a little contribution here and there, and know that it would go directly back into giveaways for our audience. So
yeah,
I think that's a great resolution, Greg. Good goal to shoot for 2018. Very nice.
You know, interesting idea. We could possibly start a Patreon where people could listen to us record through something like a Discord server.
Yeah, there's lots of possibility. One of the reasons why I have been a little bit wary about starting a Patreon is the fact that when you do have patrons, you do have to provide them with, you know, some incentive. I think that's a great incentive. I know that you had also been possibly toying with the idea of crafting a playmat, if I'm not
mistaken. Yeah, I wanted to design a playmat for us, where I had a QR code, so when we go out to events, we go to the local store. You know, it allows people to see what we're doing, and possibly something that's a little bit more special for our listeners. We'll have to figure something out at that point. But, you know, cool things are cool. Who doesn't like to get stuff?
I know I like to get stuff. I'll say that for sure. So, anyway, we have goals for this year. We hope you guys stay along for the ride, and we would love to give back to y'all whatever we can throughout the course of our podcasting career. So,
yeah.
Yep. Anyway, thank y'all for listening, and let's move on with the episode. So, Greg, we are weeks away from the release of a new set, Rivals of Ixalan.
I know. Don't they have the pre-release from Game Nights, like, next week?
The Loading Ready Run guys. Yeah, they're doing the pre-release this weekend. And,
Man.
That's going to be a very fun thing to watch.
Do you think they're going to give us full spoiler tomorrow?
Possibly. I mean, we already have, what'd you say, 100 and some
12
cards?
Of 196, yeah.
And this is a small set, so we might very well get the full spoiler by tomorrow, and that's Friday, for those of you keeping score. So, they really kind of flooded
the
us.
Trap?
Yeah. The dam is broken, the water is bursting forth, so we have had nothing but spoilers this entire week, which gives us a ton to talk about, and we're really excited to get into it. But before we get into the spoilers, we wanted to start off with a little bit of lore in regards to a very prominent figure that we have seen in one of the cards spoiled. A couple of the cards, actually, but that also leads way to, of course, we don't have any of the story yet, the official story, which in turn breeds one of our favorite things to do, which is speculate on the story to come. So, before we go any further, let's grab our keys and head over to Lore Corner.
Vroom.
Getting that vehicle.
I don't know. What's the sound of air? I don't have a pirate ship in my house.
Kind
of
like... So...
All right. So, what does this Azor dude do?
All right. So, yeah. Before we get too deep into it, let's take a look at this new lawbringer that we have here. And this, of course, is Azor the Lawbringer. He is a legendary creature sphinx for 2 white and 2 blue. He is a 6/6 flyer. And his text says, when Azor the Lawbringer enters the battlefield, each opponent can't cast instant or sorcery spells during that player's next turn. Oof. And then whenever Azor attacks, you may pay X white blue blue. If you do, you gain X life and draw X cards. Kind of a
that sounds familiar.
Yeah, kind of a revelation, if you ask me.
Is he a sphinx doing that?
He is a sphinx. So, Azor the Lawbringer is definitely good at keeping the peace, preventing your opponents from casting their spells, as well as drawing you cards and gaining you life. I mean, just before we go too much further, this guy's going to be a Commander All-Star. I think a lot of people are going to be trying to build their Azor the Lawbringer EDH deck, so be prepared for that.
Just imagine Conjurer's Closet with this.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
That kind of locks your opponent out of the game. Unless they have creatures. So anyway, this Azor character, he's kind of old, isn't he, Greg?
I don't know. He's only, like, tens of thousands of years old.
So that actually puts him pre-mending. So
yeah, it does.
This guy's OG. He's been around a bit, so to speak. So Azor was also formerly a planeswalker. So he had the ability, obviously, to hop between planes, but again, formerly. Now, Greg, why is he a former planeswalker?
So what we know of now is that he forwent his spark, used his spark, whatever it may be, imbued his spark, we're not sure about it yet, into or making the Immortal Sun. And he stands to guard it.
Right.
So I mean, this is a bit of speculation. I know it's a little early. I believe his spark is the Immortal Sun. And because it was put into an item, it might be stronger than a normal Planeswalker spark, which means it might be a god-level spark.
So, possibly his spark was transferred pre-mending, and if this whole, you know, mending action really just hit the actual beings, the living beings that had the sparks, you're saying that this may have protected his spark, so this may be a godlike spark that is being held within the Immortal Sun?
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, no.
I mean, it would explain why Bolas wants it.
Yeah, no wonder this guy is after it. I mean, he himself has been limited in his abilities ever since the mending, so his quest for power continues. And if what you say is true, then yeah, if he gets a hold of this, he could once again, you know, gain his godlike immortal status, which would be absolutely nuts.
And horrible for the rest of the multiverse.
Right. Right. Yeah. That could be kind of bad.
It could be catastrophic.
Yeah. It could be devastating for more than just an hour, if you think about it.
That's a tempting offer.
So, okay. So, a couple other things just about Azor here. He is not originally from Ravnica, but... he wrote the original Guild Pact.
Yeah.
Also, he created the Implicit Maze from the aforementioned Dragon's Maze set that we saw, the third block in the Return to Ravnica block. So he definitely played a large role in shaping Ravnica, him being the Law Mage that he is.
Yep.
But his power seems immense. So he originally...
Even without his spark, he seems immense.
Right. Right, yeah, no. So when he created this Immortal Sun, he first brought it to Torizon, which is sort of the home of the vampires, as we learned from our lore of Ixalan.
Whoa. It's only the home of the vampires because they took over and forced the humans out. That's why we have the Brazen Coalition now.
Right, right. Thanks.
If it wasn't for them being forced out... the vampires might have never become.
Right. Right. Thanks to your friend Alenda.
Oh, man. There's a card for that now?
Oh, yeah. And we'll get to that for sure. So Azor later brought it to Orozca. And he is also revered by the River Heralds. So he's known on Ixalan and obviously well-respected. There's a couple of story cards. We actually got all the story cards for this set revealed to us, and there's only three. So, what's the first one of these story cards that we've seen, Greg?
You have Flood of Recollection as a blue sorcery, and allows you to return an instant or sorcery from your graveyard to your hand. And it says, Jace tumbled down the waterfall and plunged deep into his past. And the artwork kind of shows him. It shows the Gatewatch. It shows the Mage Ring Network on Vryn. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I think he might remember his home plane now.
Yeah, it's as if all those memories that got wiped away, even the ones from before his encounters with Alhamaret when he was wiping his memory, might be returning to him. This could be insanely, I don't know the correct word.
Strong?
Strong. Yeah, I was going to say something to the regards of meaningful, but if he understands that much about his past, then... I mean, he's gonna have to think fast about what he is going to do in his current situation. And we see one of those decisions happen in the second story card that we got. And the second story card is called Induced Amnesia. And on this card, we see a picture of Jace behind Vraska, and he appears to be tampering with her mind. And yeah, for two and a blue, you get an enchantment that says, when induced amnesia enters the battlefield, target player exiles all cards from his or her hand face down and draws that many cards. When induced amnesia is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return the exiled cards to their owner's hand. So you don't even have to discard the cards that you draw. You just add to it. Yep. So,
could you imagine blinking a card like this?
Oh, man. This would be this would be just ridiculous with the amount of cards that you could draw, the amount of cards you could see out of your deck.
All right, so then
yes,
we have the third card.
Well, before we do that, we gotta talk about this. Like, there's a couple things that could be happening here. I mean, Jace could realize everything that's happened and look to Vraska and say, "Oh no, well, it's best for me to look at her and say, We gotta clear the slate of what's happened here. She needs to remember all about her past. She needs to know who she is, where she's from, what she's made of, and it's just unfortunate. So here we go. We're gonna wipe her memory, only that of from when she arrived on Ixalan.
Or maybe this is a friendlier Jace, and he is using his amnesia skills, like the ability to sculpt minds, to make her forget the abuse that she had on Ravnica and how he treated her badly.
Ooh, interesting.
I mean, it sounds a little selfish, but...
Well, that also could suggest maybe it wasn't Jace's decision. Maybe he actually got to talk to Vraska and she was like, you know, maybe I just want to forget all those horrific, you know, moments where I was tortured in those cells.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Who knows? Speculation abound. All right, Greg, why don't you finish us off with the third card here in this set?
So the third card is Mastermind's Acquisition. It is two generic black sorcery. It says, choose one. Search your library for a card and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. That's pretty good. Or choose a card you own from outside the game and put it into your hand. Yeah, that's right. This card wishes without a drawback.
Wow.
Is so good.
Wow.
The flavor text says, another piece of a nefarious puzzle.
Huh.
The artwork represents the immortal sun being pulled from the plane on its plinth, where Azor is in his art. And it looks like the possibility the planar bridge is pulling it through. And it looks like Vraska could be there in the room. But I'm not sure. It could be Jace after reading her mind.
It could be. I mean, we just don't know yet. The quote says, another piece of a nefarious puzzle. So
it tells me that Bolas gets his piece.
Now,
if this is a Planeswalker spark, I don't want to see Bolas with two sparks. But tell me what you thought. You had a different idea earlier with what he might do with something like this.
Well, seeing this card here, I mean, you see, if that is Vraska on the card, then I don't see Jace. You know,
yeah.
Maybe Jace did wipe her memory of the time on Ixalan, and she immediately is, you know, against Jace yet again. I mean, her whole job on Ixalan is to retrieve the Immortal Sun for Nicol Bolas or Lord Nicholas, and
yeah,
if she's in fact succeeding in that, then okay, so. Let's just paint a picture for you here of what's going on with El Señor Bolas's plan. You've got an all-powerful being who has the immortal sun, which...
Whoa. Are we talking about Azor being the all-powerful, not Bolas?
Oh, I'm talking about Bolas here.
Bolas isn't all powerful anymore. That's why he's on this hunt to get powerful items.
Well, okay, yeah, no. The card doesn't say all powerful at all. It just says Mastermind's acquisition. So let's refer to him as the mastermind of this nefarious puzzle. So
okay, that works. I can deal with that.
Okay, so here's what Bolas will have after this, okay? Nicol Bolas will have the Immortal Sun,
mm-hmm.
which will trap planeswalkers on a plane, okay?
As it is now.
We've seen what it can do on Ixalan. So he mm-hmm. can create a jail for planeswalkers. Now, how do you get planeswalkers into this jail? Well, you have an army of Eternals. You have gods that are immortal. You have a planar bridge that you can transport your entire army through, including himself, who can planeswalk, obviously. He can just go wherever he wants.
Yeah.
But you can set this Immortal Sun up on Amonkhet, which he absolutely destroyed. So you have a prison that he created, and he can now use his planar bridge to move his armies around and suck planeswalkers into Amonkhet or wherever his prison is, and they're trapped there forever because they can't planeswalk away.
Your thought is that Nicol Bolas is Emperor Palpatine?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Emperor Palpatine lacks the vision that Bolas has. He's more concerned with just the hate and, you know, all that other stuff. I mean, Bolas is just like anything goes. He's just out having fun. He wants to put together this elaborate game of mousetrap that he's going to win. And it's looking like he might actually do it if all this stuff comes to fruition. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. It's kind of scary.
It's very scary. I mean, it's getting exciting. I mean, think about it. If we go to Dominaria, right, and instead of, you know, the Eldrazi becoming the menace that are plaguing all these planes that we see, if on a moment's notice you could have an army of Eternals just descend upon you and slaughter everything, and then they activate the planar bridge and they shove a planeswalker through it somehow, and it appears on Amonkhet, which is sealed with the Immortal Sun. He could do this to anybody, and he could just, I mean, maybe he's trying to do it to Ugin.
Well, here's the thing. Does he know Ugin's alive again?
I don't know. I have no idea. Again, pure speculation, but it seems like his plan is actually working. I've yet to see how Ral Zarek is going to be coming into this play, but it's it's all very, very exciting. All right, well, unless you have anything else you want to speculate on about the lore of what's going on.
No.
We got a lot of other stuff to talk about here. So let's cut the lore here and head over to our news and announcements section. And this week, it's going to be a little Through the Looking Glass.
I can see it.
There it is.
My designs are coming fruitful.
Okay, so
fruition. That's the word. My designs are coming to fruition.
To fruition. Ah, there you go. So one of the best parts about recording our cast later on in the week is we have access to so many cards to talk about. So we will do what we can to talk about some of the highlights, and of course we're not going to be able to talk about all of them, but we're going to start from the newest ones that were spoiled today, which is Thursday. Probably going to be more, a lot more, coming out tomorrow on Friday. But with what we have right now, Greg, where do you want to kick us off?
I don't know.
Why don't you talk to us about your friend, the Wayward Swordtooth?
I like this card. So, Wayward Swordtooth is a 2 generic and a green creature dinosaur. It has Ascend. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Ascend is a static ability, so if you get 10 permanents, you get the city's blessing, correct?
There you go. Yep.
Yeah, okay. So what it says is before you have the city's blessing, you may play an additional land on each of your turns. Okay, this card's already good.
Yeah.
It's a 3-drop Oracle Moldiah.
Or it's a 3-drop Exploration.
Yeah. Okay. It's an exploration with a body.
Sure.
And then if you have the city's blessing, he can attack, or he can attack and block. Otherwise, he can't.
Okay. Right. So he's a 5/5 for 3.
Yeah.
Definitely passing the vanilla test.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I think the ability to play an additional land on each of your turns is going to make this guy a very, very key piece in some new decks coming out.
Oh, yeah.
With all these cards, like, I got to think that there's some other stuff we could be doing than watching Teemer Energy, you know, still run rampant. I mean, I don't know.
This card kind of makes Teemer Energy even good, better.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't produce energy. That's the only thing, is your 3-drops in that deck want to produce energy for you. In fact, all the cards in that deck want to produce energy, so I don't know if this will actually
work. That's true.
Yeah, so... All right.
But it does give you extra lands. It does give you that city's blessing. It is a 5/5 for 3.
Right. Yeah.
So good. Which one are you wanting to talk about here? I figure we could get a couple from each day in.
Yeah. I actually really like this next card here, Twilight Prophet. For 2 black. You get a 2/4 vampire cleric with flying. It also has ascend, so you get the city's blessing for the 10 or more permanents. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have the city's blessing, reveal the top card of your library and put it into your hand. Each opponent loses X life, and you gain X life, where X is that card's converted mana cost. Now remember, city's blessing says 10 or more permanents, so already, if you have the 4 lands to player, and her out as well, then all you need is just another 5, and chances are you've been playing cards for your first 3 turns. Does not seem that hard to get, especially in a game like Commander, but incredibly powerful card, and usually when you reveal cards and draw them, you're losing life, and in this case, all your opponents are losing life.
Yeah, and definitely making your opponents pay for your additional cards seems good.
Yeah, and in a game like Commander, you're going to be flipping cards that have the converted mana costs of 5 or higher. So this is going to be very, very effective if put in the right deck. Greg, why don't you name off another one?
Another card. Gosh, this 9-drop is really hard to say no to. So we have Zakama, the Primal Calamity. It is 6 generic, red, green, white. Legendary creature, elder, dinosaur. This is that 3-headed dino we saw. This guy seems really cool. He has vigilance, reach, and trample. And when he enters the battlefield, if you cast him, untap all lands you control. Wait, what?
So you're going to want to play this guy with a lot of lands, not so much mana rocks.
Yeah. This guy seems really strong. I just imagine dropping him out, bouncing him, and recasting him.
Yeah.
If you have the ability to do something like that, it seems good.
Yeah.
Then he has generic and a red to deal 3 damage to target creature. Yeah, pay 3, deal 3. 2 generic and a green, destroy target artifact or enchantment. 2 generic and a white, gain 3 life. He is also a 9/9. This guy is giant. He's good. He plays. I don't think he's good in, say, standard. But in formats where you get to cast creatures cheaply and cheat them out, I think Show and Tell says you cast a creature for free, right?
Show and Tell, Sneak Attack. I mean, this guy was Sneak Attack.
No, Sneak Attack just sneaks him out. But say, like, I think Show and Tell allows you to cheat out. Or could you imagine Mirror Halls. Oh, I'll discard a white card and play Zakama.
Oh, Dream Halls.
Dream Halls. Thank you.
That seems really crazy.
Fist of the Suns.
Sure. I mean, if you're playing Sneak Attack, just think about it. It's one red to put a creature out. It gains haste, and you sacrifice it at the end of the turn. So you sneak out five or six creatures, and then this is your last guy. You get to untap all those lands and do stuff.
You have to actually cast him to untap.
No. When Primal Calamity enters the battle... if you cast it. Never mind. You got me. Okay.
I got you.
You did.
Dream Halls is a good way around it. There's also cards. I want to say Show and Tell says cast, but I think
no. Show and Tell says everyone picks one and puts it on the battlefield. So
yeah, okay.
Yeah, no. You'd have to get it's that enchantment. I keep referring to it from Avacyn Restored, the green and two, Ancestors, something or other. Where you reveal a card, and if it shares a type, you get to cast it for free.
Descendant's Path?
Descendant's Path. There you go. That casts for sure.
That's the art by Therese Nielsen.
Yep. There you go.
How did you forget that card, man?
Dude, that card is boss.
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
it really is.
And then not to mention the fact that since this costs 9, if you actually legit cast it with all your lands, you get to untap them all. Potentially, if you have the right color combinations, you could do 9 damage, you know, 3/3/3 to any number of creatures.
Or... blow up 3 artifacts or enchantments in a game like EDH.
Or gain 9 life. Like, he's so good. Or spread it out. Like, he's so good. He's amazing. Now, here's the real question, Greg. Are you running this guy or Gishath as your commander?
That's a hard choice. I haven't decided yet. Gishath is good in the 99. This is good in the 99. The problem is if you get him out with Gishath, you don't get anything special. Now, there is another card that you do get something special with him. But that's to come. I don't know. I still think I like Gishath because he's a stronger body. I mean, he's not bigger, sure. But he does more coming out. Right. I would rather drop this guy out for free on the Gishath swing than actually casting him.
Yeah, so maybe Gishath is still going to be your commander, but this guy is part of the 99.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I like Gishath's ability as a general much more than this guy. Also, simply based on the fact of his mana cost, you know? And if he dies, you're going to have to start paying 11, 13, 15 mana for him.
It gets expensive quick. It
gets very expensive, yeah. All right, well, I'm going to take
kinda like
us...
like Christmas this year.
Yeah. I'm going to take us to our first flip card that we're going to talk about today, and that is Azor's Gateway. For 2 mana, you get a legendary artifact that says tap 1, tap it, draw a card, then exile a card from your hand. If cards with 5 or more different converted mana costs are exiled with Azor's Gateway, you gain 5 life, untap Azor's Gateway, and transform it. Now, let's break that down real quick. This is almost like Baron Von Count status here, because you have to exile cards with 5 different converted mana costs. I mean, the cheapest would be actually 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4, but you can go 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, any combination as long as they're different. So that's going to take you about 5 turns, unless you have shenanigans where you can untap it, blah, 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 blah. But once you transform it, Azor's Gateway transforms into Sanctum of the Sun, which is a legendary land that says tap, add X mana of any one color to your mana pool, where X is your life total.
So you mean to tell me that this card is busted Vic Bustardson in EDH? Because, I mean, what if I play this in my Savala deck and I'm at 1,000 life?
I mean, I just want to, you know, paint a pretty picture for you here. Like, you go turn 1, Sol Ring, Azor's Gateway. Turn 2, you know, Voltaic Key. And you untap and do Azor's Gateway twice. Turn 3, you play another land, you do Azor's Gateway, maybe you get some other shenanigan, and you flip it that turn. So on turn 3, you have a land that can provide 40 mana of any one color, unless anybody's kind of messed with your life total. But that's just nuts, man.
Is that bonkers?
I think that's bonkers. Crazy. Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is going to be really hard to make work in standard, don't get me wrong, but cool. This is the dream hard of dream hards right here.
It really is. Yeah.
So we'll let you play with that, you know, come up with some ideas for how to use that. But let's move on to our next card. Greg, what do you want to talk about for our next card?
My thing put me back a page.
Oh, no. I totally set you up for your favorite card here.
My favorite card? What's my favorite card? I don't know. I think my favorite card right now is two generic and a red. An enchantment. And it says when it enters the battlefield, you draw a card. And all lands lose all abilities except mana abilities. That's right. This is Blood Sun, a 3-drop replacement for Blood Moon. And I think this card is just really strong for EDH because you get to say no to all of your opponent's busted abilities on their lands, and you still aren't hurting their mana base.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. I mean, one of the worst things about Blood Moon is it just turns off all of your non-basic lands, and they all become mountains. This just says, you know, even if you have the shock lands, if you have the tri lands, they will still be able to provide that mana for you, but you won't be able to, as you put it, you won't be able to Thespian Stage of Dark Depths. Heck, you won't even be able to Dark Depths. You won't be able to Glacial Chasm. You won't be able to you won't be able to Bazaar of Baghdad. You won't be able to do any number of things.
Yeah.
Tabernacle. You know, you won't have to pay your mana for your creatures. Like, this is very, very good. And it also enables you to still provide the color flexibility for running a multicolored deck.
Yeah. I'm really excited for this card. I think it's good. I think it's going to see play in some competitive fields, especially with cards like Search for Azkanta being so strong in Standard right now.
Right. Yep.
Because this card shuts that one off.
Yep. But cards like Cradle of Itlamok and even Sanctum of the Sun, as I said, those will not be shut off because they are mana abilities. So
any land
that says tap for an ungodly amount of mana will still tap for an ungodly amount of mana.
Like Nykthos?
Like Nykthos. Yep, absolutely.
Or Cabal Coffers. Oof, I love that card.
There you go.
That does so much.
So I also wanted to talk about a red card here. This card...
Is it Mutiny?
It's better than Mutiny. This card I have extremely high hopes for in almost all formats.
Because what's that?
We've seen similar cards, but this one is it's so good, and I cannot wait to see it perform. This is Dire Fleet Daredevil. Now, this is a translation, so this is as close as we get for now. But Dire Fleet Daredevil costs 1 and a red for a human pirate with first strike. It's a 2/1. And it says, when Dire Fleet Daredevil enters the battlefield, exile target instant or sorcery card from an opponent's graveyard. You can cast that card this turn, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color. If that card would be put into a graveyard this turn, exile it instead.
That's busted.
So,
I mean, do you want to cast your opponent's spells?
I would love to cast my opponent's spells. I mean, let's take this into the format where I really see it shining, and that is Modern. So this is a 2-drop, right? So you're going to want to have at least 3 mana when you play this thing, because there's no shortage of 1-drop spells that people are playing. So you could, in theory, on turn 3, go, you know, Dire Fleet Daredevil. Oh, and it also, the whole spending mana as if it were mana of any color. You could be in a mono red deck and say, here's my Dire Fleet Daredevil, I'm a Thought Seize you. Or, here's my Dire Fleet Daredevil, I'm a Opt. Or, I'm gonna Serum Visions. Or, I'm gonna Fatal Push something. I mean, you know, in Standard, you're looking to play this and maybe cast an Attune with Aether, so it might not be as good, but there are a couple other 1-mana spells that would make it decent. But still, this card is amazing. I think that this card is going to be seeing a whole heck of a lot of play across multiple formats.
Is that what you thought about Dual Caster Mage too?
Dual Caster Mage, not so much, because that could only be played in Commander and Legacy, and it still is not that amazing. I mean, unless you're playing with an Aether Vial, With an Aether Vial, this card gets really good. The dual caster mage
does.
Speaking of Aether Vial, I was reading some comments where they're talking about Direfleet Daredevil, and they're like, oh, it's missing Flash. It would be so much better if it had Flash. Well, duh. It would be super broken if it had Flash. But also, you're playing it in it's a human pirate. You can play this thing in your humans deck, and you're running Aether Vial. You can essentially give it Flash and put it in play during your opponent's turn. And
then, that seems good.
Right? And then, like, let's say you're even in a Ramunap Red deck, or you're in some other deck in Standard, and you cast Direfleet Daredevil. You give your opponent's Negate Flashback for yourself until end of turn. You don't have to cast it right when you play this card.
Man.
It's just till end of turn. So you could say, you know, okay, I swing in with everything, and they go, settle the wreckage, and you're like, well, let me just cast that Negate that I gave Flashback to, and we're all good. So this card seems really, really, really good, and I cannot wait to see it take part in decks across Standard, across Modern, maybe Legacy, we'll see. But still, Direfleet Daredevil, love this card.
Yeah, it seems really good. The next card I'm going to go to is one I know you're excited about, and that is Path of Metal.
Yes.
So that's a red and a white legendary enchantment, and it says whenever it enters the battlefield, it deals one damage to each creature that doesn't have first strike, double strike, vigilance, or haste. Yeah, that means if it doesn't have any pretty much white or red abilities, it's going to take a damage.
Yep.
Yeah. Doesn't care about lifelink. Still doing the damage. And it says, whenever you attack with at least two creatures that have first strike, double strike, vigilance, and or haste, transform this. So that means if you've got two hasty creatures you drop on a one drop, like a Monastery Swift Spear or something, you would flip this card.
Yep.
And on the back, it is Metzeli, Tower of Triumph. It is a legendary land. And it says, tap, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Already good. Or, tap a generic in red and tap it to deal two damage to each opponent.
Each opponent. Very good.
Or, two generic and a white, tap, choose a creature at random that attacked this turn and destroy it. So that means if your opponent attacks with one creature and you're like, I'll pay three and tap this before blockers, and that creature is now destroyed. Yeah. Now, this doesn't do as much against those indestructible pesky gods.
Hazoret, yeah.
But it does allow you to destroy most anything else.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a good card.
I think this is going to be a great card against a deck like Teemer Energy, because you're going to be able to... There's actually quite a few one-drop creatures for white and red that you can, you know, be pretty aggressive with and drop this maybe on a turn three or even a turn four. And as soon as you actually attack with those creatures... even vampires. Like, if you're running that mono-white vampires deck and you're playing, like, a Mavern Fane or something, all those creatures have vigilance. So don't worry about doing that one damage to your tokens, because they have vigilance. Oh, they got lifelink. Ugh. You know what does have vigilance, though? Those Oketra's Monument tokens. Those come as warrior tokens with vigilance.
They do.
This could be really good with that. But anyway, once you flip it, and you get that whole tap two, tap a white, choose a creature at random that attacked this turn, destroy that creature. You can do that as soon as right after the declare attacker step. So if they're swinging at you with their, you know, Bristling Hydra and their Rogue Refiner or, you know, whatever, you know, they're like, I swing with these two. Okay, well, first off, let's destroy a creature at random. So that Bristling Hydra, you can give it hexproof all you want. It might just die, you know, and then you can worry about who you actually have to block. This is crazy. Like,
it also forces things. Having another thing to target something like that, it gets you some distance on dealing with problems.
Right.
Yeah.
And there will be those unfortunate 1 out of 100 situations where, you know, it ends up being Hazoret and it's indestructible, so oops. Or it hits the Scarab God and the Scarab God dies and comes back. I mean, they'll still have to cast it. But on the whole, that is such a powerful, repeatable ability. The fact that Path of Metal only costs white-red means that this is a very playable card in, I'm going to go ahead and say, multiple formats. So
I agree with that.
I mean, if you're playing Burn, you know, Boros Burn in Modern, you know, turn one Goblin Guide, you know, turn two Goblin Guide, turn three Path of Metal, and... I mean, I know it's a little bit counterproductive, but then you get the repeatable 2 damage to each opponent on the backside. You get blow up your opponent's creatures that are attacking you.
If you have nothing better to do than pay 2 and deal 2, Recursible, I mean, it does more than punishing Fire and Grove of the Burn Willows.
Yeah. Yeah, and it ramps.
Yeah.
In white and red, it ramps because this enchantment will turn into a land, which effectively turns this into a rampant growth if you meet all the conditions. I know it's a lot, mm-hmm. but still, white and red are begging for land ramp, and this gives
Always.
It to them.
It so, does. That's true.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
It's pretty good. I think Path of Metal is going to see a lot of good play moving forward. All right, so moving along, I wanted to talk about Dire Fleet Poisoner. I actually was listening to the Top Level Podcast with Michael Flores and Patrick Chapin. This was their preview card, and this card is amazing. Unlike the aforementioned Dire Fleet Daredevil, this card does have flash. It is a 2/2 for 1 and a black. It has Death Touch. It's a human pirate. And it says, when Dire Fleet Poisoner enters the battlefield, target attacking pirate you control gets +1/+1 and gains Death Touch until end of turn.
What?
So that's essentially 2 kill spells that you have at the helm when you're playing pirates and when you're playing Dire Fleet Poisoner. So let's say you're playing that, what is it, a Vicious Conquistador, the one drop that when you attack it does a damage to your opponent. Let's just say that you're playing with that, right? And you're swinging in and they're like really annoyed at the fact that they're getting 1 damage each time, right? Well, you swing in and they're like, well, I block with my, you know, big old creature. You know, no mm-hmm. problems there. Well, I'm just going to flash in this Poisoner and now that creature's dead. And if it's small enough, maybe the Conquistador lives. Who knows?
Yeah.
Also, they'd mentioned, and this is just genius, Kari Zev is a pirate. And she has Menace. So, bro, check it out. You swing with Kari Zev, they got a block with 2 creatures. And if you give Kari Zev +1 to her attack, and she has Death Touch, boom, boom. And she has First Strike. Boom, boom. That's nuts, man. Kudos for figuring that out. That's insane.
That's sweet. Yeah. I would have never seen that.
So, Dire Fleet Poisoner, I mean, kudos to Top Level Podcast. They do a great job, and that is something to really, really be aware of and look out for while Kari Zev is still in standard. Pretty savage. Why don't you give us another one here, Greg?
Another one? I'm going to move back a day.
Okay.
All right, and I like dinos, and I'm going to talk about Polyraptor.
Ooh, good one.
He wants a cracker. He really does. He is a 6 generic green creature dinosaur, and he is a 5/5. He has an enraged trigger that says, whenever he is dealt damage, create a token that is a copy of this card.
Oh, God. Seems so
do you know
good.
What card seems really good with this?
Huh.
Pyrohemia.
Dude, this fits right into your Gishath and Rage deck that you were building,
oh, yeah.
doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does. I am excited. This card seems really strong. Does some good stuff. It is expensive at an 8 drop. Don't get me wrong. But, you know what? At an 8 drop, this card's good.
Yeah. I should sure say so. I mean, one damage, because in theory you could create four of these guys.
So let's say, for instance, the Dreamheart, I got Pyrohemia and like four red. So the first one, I create one copy. The second time, I create two. So now I have four. The third time, I create another four. Now there's eight. On the last time, I now have 16 Polyraptors, not including like Caltrops triggers or Aether Flash.
No, Greg, you're wrong. You're wrong. You would have, obviously, doubling season out. You would have parallel lives out, and this would just get...
An anointed procession,
and this would just get so stupid. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. This card is so good.
It is. It is very strong.
You could play Galta for two legit with this guy, easy.
Yes.
Oh, but
you know, there's other cards of thought that I think's really strong. So
yeah. You know what would just actually the next card I want to talk about. You know what would actually just, I hate to say it, what would ruin that dream in a split second.
Is it Slaughter the Strong?
No, it's Crafty Cut Purse.
What? What's that guy do?
For three and a blue, you get a 2/2 human pirate with flash. That says, when Crafty Cut Purse enters the battlefield, each token that would be created under an opponent's control this turn is created under your control instead.
What? Don't steal my dinos. Those are my dinos.
My first thought with this card was, you want to cast Brass's Bounty? Give me your treasure. I'm gonna cut it right off your belt.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's so many like token creation that this kills the Saheeli Cat combo. This kills
Spell's Window,
Kiki Jiki combos. Yeah, this kills like all the combo out token decks. Like it's like no, I'm just gonna get it. You know, it's so good. I think that Crafty Cut Purse is gonna be useful in both, you know, constructed competitive formats as well as obviously Commander, but Crafty Cut Purse is pretty amazing, and I cannot wait to get my hands on a couple copies of that one.
Yeah, of course, because you're like, no tokens, stop that.
Give me them tokens. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, Greg, which one do you want to talk about next?
You know what? I am going to talk about the Forerunner Cycle.
Ooh, okay.
So we have an uncommon cycle called the Forerunners. There's the Forerunner of the Empire, of the Heralds, of the Legion, and of the Coalition. So that is four of them. We are missing one in blue. We don't have a blue Forerunner. So the Forerunner of the Empire is a 1/3 for four human soldier. And it says when enters a battlefield, you may search your library for a dinosaur card and then reveal it and shuffle your library and put that card on top of it. Also, whenever a dinosaur enters the battlefield under your control, you may have Forerunner of the Empire deal one damage to each creature. That's right. I said it deals the damage. So that means you give this card Death Touch, and it kills the field. You give this card Lifelink, and you gain a bunch of life.
Nice.
It also triggers all of your Enrage.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Like if you want to create copies of that Polysaur.
Polyraptor.
Polyraptor, there you go. Yep.
He is my precious, and I will feed him crackers. Okay. Then we got Forerunner of the Herald, which is a 3/2 Merfolk Scout. It is green, and it says when there is battlefield, you search the library for a Merfolk card revealed and put on top of shuffle the deck and then put it on top. And whenever another merfolk enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on this creature. So it will get bigger.
Yep.
All right. Yep. Forerunner of the Legion. Vampire Knight, 2/2 for 3. White. When it enters the battlefield, you search for a vampire. Seems good, right? And whenever another vampire enters the battlefield under your control, target creature gets +1/+1. I like it. It's strong. But the one that I think is the best is the Forerunner of the Coalition. It is a human pirate, 2/2 for 3, in black. It searches up a pirate just like the rest of the Forerunners do. But it says, whenever another pirate enters the battlefield under your control, each of your opponents lose a life. Yeah. It's good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that definitely has... I think that might even see some standard play if we do see this Pirates deck take off.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
That would be something else. You know, I would love to see standard get a little bit more wide open.
Well, we all want standard to be wider.
Right, yeah. And a lot, this set, Greg, seems very strong. And there's really no reason why we can't, you know, put our collective communal heads together and brew up something to take down the Teemer Menace. So moving right along here, I really, really, really wanted to point out this one right here because I think it's a great catalyst for another ability in this set. Well, this card is called Teelanali's Summoner. There we go.
Okay.
For one and a red, you get a 1/1 with Ascend that says if you control 10 or more permanents, blah, 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 you get good stuff. Whenever Teelanali's Summoner attacks, you may pay X red. If you do, create X 1/1 red elemental creature tokens that are tapped and attacking. At the beginning of your next end step, exile those tokens unless you have the city's blessing. Now, this card, when it enters the battlefield, does Ascend happen when it enters the battlefield or anytime even after the card has entered the battlefield?
I believe Ascend is a static ability, so anytime that you would get that number, you get that.
Okay. So what we have here is a 2-drop 1/1 that can turbo your ascension, essentially. Because if you're able to put, you know, 3 or 4 mana into X and create 3 or 4 extra permanents during your turn, you're already at, let's say you do 4. You know, that's 4 plus the 2 lands, that's 6, plus Teelanali's Summoner, that's 7. I mean, that's 3 more that you need and you have Ascend already.
Yeah.
It's so good at enabling this Ascend ability. If there's going to be an Ascend deck, then I really think the Teelanali's Summoner is a great catalyst, like I said, to get you there. I mean, there's a lot of cards here.
What about that 5-drop? Do you remember that 5-drop that puts out a Saperlein every upkeep?
Yeah. Yeah, they're really, really giving you the tools that you need to get there with the whole Ascend mechanic, but
yeah.
I think Teelanali's Summoner will be able to do that for you a little bit quicker than a lot of people expect. And plus, like you said, we have Anointed Procession. So
yeah, we do.
Yeah. Why don't you name off another card for us here?
I like tokens. Let me go find this one.
No, you don't.
What? No, I don't. Wait, yes, I do. It is a 5-drop. Is a green creature. It's 4 generic and a green.
Is it the Tender Shoot Dryad?
That sounds correct. There you are. So, this is a 5-drop 2/2 Dryad. Small. But it has Ascend. And it says at the beginning of each upkeep, so that's yours and your opponent's, you get a 1/1 green Saperlein creature token. Pretty strong. Also, if you have the Sitting's Blessing, your Saperlein's get +2/+2. So that means this guy pops out 3/3s if you have the Sitting's Blessing.
Wow. That's
but,
pretty
you know,
good.
You drop this out on turn 5 because you're tempoing the game. Then that's 6 permanents. Your opponent's turn, it's 7. On your turn, it's 8. And all you got to do is drop 2 things. You
yep.
know, like a land and a creature.
Yep. Seems
yeah.
good. Seems really good.
Yeah, it seems pretty promising. Like, there's a lot you could do with cards like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll take...
Do you want to talk about the elephant in the room for 5,000?
I think so, but there's no elephants on this card. In fact, it's a picture of Admiral Beckett Brass commanding her troops to get off a ship and go do some damage.
Could it be It's like the Admiral's Order?
It is the Admiral's Order. Unfortunately, there's no damage involved in the card, but fortunately, we have a counter spell. So, one blue-blue instant counter-target spell. It's a rare. Wait, isn't that what cancel does? Oh, wait, I missed this line of text here. It has raid. If you attacked with a creature this turn, you may pay blue rather than pay this spell's mana cost. A one CMC counter spell. Not non-creature spell,
what?
Like Stubborn Denial. Not creature spell, like Essence Scatter. This is a counter target spell if you have attacked with a creature this turn. So, I'm going to start off by saying this is not in a control deck. This has no place in a control deck whatsoever. What this does is this helps your deck fight against control decks. Because obviously combat tricks are a huge part of Magic, especially mm-hmm. when you're playing with aggressive decks. So this allows you to protect your troops when you swing in. First thing I heard out of a lot of people was, you know, this handles Settle the Wreckage, which is a beat down if you're not ready for it. A lot of the goals of these aggressive decks is just to swing and ask questions later. Well, when you have no creatures left to ask questions about, you get kind of hosed and generally lose. But Admiral's Order can help you from losing the game by countering that Settle the Wreckage or that kill spell. Or if you were to run this somehow in a modern Merfolk deck, this mm-hmm. would counter spells like Sphinx's Revelation, or anything your opponent wants to do on their end step. So it's really going to warp when players play certain spells. They're going to want to play it before combat if they really want to get it through, if you're threatening Admiral's Order. I think this is going to show up a lot. And, you know, we'll see where it eventually finds a home, if it does find a home in any deck at all. But I really think the allure of a one-drop counterspell is really going to push this card to see play in multiple formats, in my opinion.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I agree.
So.
So the elephant I was talking about is Itali, the Primal Storm.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. There's one other elephant, and he's a blue one.
Yep.
But this guy is a 4 generic red 6/6 legendary creature elder dinosaur. There's that elder creature type again. And it says, whenever Itali attacks, exile the top card of each player's library. Then you may cast any number of non-land cards exiled this way without paying their mana cost. Yeah, you heard that right. It exiles all cards. So if you're playing this in a two-player game, you can cast maybe 2 spells. In a 4-player game, 4 spells. It's good.
It's very good.
A lot of people are liking this to a Narset. Sure, it doesn't drop as early, but it allows you to play it in a more limited capacity, and getting extra spells off your opponent's decks are great in EDH. Mindclaw Shaman is really good because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Totally agree. And as a legendary creature, this guy could be your commander. Seems very, very abusable if you want to double abilities and stuff like that. The fact that you don't have, you can pay him for play the cards for free is just insane. It's so good. This card, No chance for standard, I don't think, but I think this guy's going to be showing up a lot in Commander coming up here. Alright, well, I would be just a tad remiss if I didn't at least talk about this this Planeswalker card here, Huatli, Radiant Champion. For 2, a green and a white, you get a 3 loyalty Planeswalker, Huatli, with 3 abilities. Her +1, put a loyalty counter on Huatli, Radiant Champion, for each creature you control. -1, target creature gets +X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. -8, you get an emblem with whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card.
Yeah.
I would love, love to see a refurbished Oketra's Monument style deck with Whatley and Cradle of Itlamok. I think that all of that together would, you know, make an incredibly powerful deck. Maybe not as powerful as Teemer Energy, but the makings are here for a deck that can just explode. And I mean, if you want to make it Abzan tokens with Hidden Stockpile, even better. It's crazy. And I think the emblem, whenever you play a creature, draw a card, it's an 8 cost, and she comes down as a 3, so they're starting to factor in the whole doubling season to ultimate thing here. She can't do that. But she definitely seems like she can make your Selesnya plus X, whatever it is, deck really, really hum. So I think she's going to be a good Planeswalker. Not broken, not insane, but she'll be a good Planeswalker.
I'm excited for her.
Yeah.
I'll play
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
So I think there's maybe two other cards I think we should talk about.
Okay.
One is the called it Kamenna, Tyrant of Orozca.
Oh, yeah.
He is a generic blue-green that is a 3-drop legendary creature, Merfolk Shaman. He is a 2/4. And he's got three abilities. His first ability is tap another untapped Merfolk you control. He can't be blocked this turn. Tapped 3 untapped Merfolk you control, draw a card. Tap 5 untapped Merfolk you control, put a 1/1 counter on each Merfolk you control.
Now, Greg, when we talked about this guy earlier, we came to the conclusion that he was going to be an aggressive Merfolk. And
yes.
I think we got that right. I mean, tapping 5 untapped Merfolk you control to put a counter, it will definitely get aggressive. I mean, you can do it at the end of your opponent's turn. You can do it with Merfolk that you just summoned. He seems very, very strong.
Yeah, he's a toolbox. I think he's great. I'm very happy with his card.
Yeah.
He seems like a real rude dude.
A real, real rude dude, yep. And the fact that you can go, you know, Merfolk, and then turn 3, play Kamenna, tap all 3 of them, draw a card. It builds on itself. You know,
wasn't there another deck recently in Standard that kind of did that? I think it was a zombie deck.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Merfolk, the new zombie. Here you go.
Very possible. I mean, there's a Lord that is a 2-drop Merfolk now.
Yep.
As a blue-green.
Yep. I don't think we'll get to that this time, but...
No.
The last one we wanted to talk about, speaking of lore and all things interesting with the history of Ixalan, we have Alenda, the Dusk Rose, herself.
Yeah.
For 2, a white and a black, you get a 1/1 legendary vampire knight with lifelink. Whenever another creature dies, put a +1/+1 counter on Alenda, the Dusk Rose. When Alenda dies, create X11 white vampire creature tokens with lifelink, where X is Alenda's power. Her centuries-long search is ended. So,
yeah. She
seems really, really good. Another build-around creature, and in the mono-white vampires deck, if you splash black for her, that could get filthy. That could get really, really crazy. I like her. I like her a lot, both in Standard and in Commander.
Yep. I have a lot of people that are like, ooh, I want to build this. This looks like fun.
It does.
And I'm like, I don't know. I did have one card I wanted to talk about before we left.
Okay, finish this off,
and
Greg.
This is a busted card for Commander, specifically Marisil the Pretender.
Okay, hit me.
And this is Nezahal, Primal Tide.
Ooh.
5 generic blue for a 7/7 Elder Dinosaur. Nezahal cannot be countered. You have no maximum hand size. Whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, draw a card. All great abilities. But what's stupid is the ability to discard 3 cards exile Nezahal and return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. Yeah, you heard that right. Discard 3 cards to blink it out of existence until the end of turn. So anytime it gets targeted, anytime it does anything, you get to discard 3 cards, which is something you already want to be doing with Marisil. And then, guess what? You get another trigger.
You're right. That seems pretty ridiculous.
It does everything you want to be doing. Discarding cards, blinking, re-entering the battlefield. Gosh. It's strong.
Yeah.
Almost too strong. All right. That's all I had. There's other cards that are really cool.
There are. And, you know, we're going to get to play with these coming up soon enough. You know, like you said, pre-release coming up this weekend. Then you got the pre-release, and then Ixalan is upon us. Rivals of Ixalan comes, and hopefully a shift in standard comes. We got plenty of stuff to brew with, and we'll definitely be hitting the bruise side of the win condition coming up in the near future. So that's going to do it for our talk on preview cards this week. And that's kind of going to wrap up the episode for us. Before we get out of here, just a reminder, all these cards and boxes of Rivals of Ixalan are going to be available on Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where all your orders over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION. It'll save you 10% off your purchase and help contribute to future show giveaways.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, Greg.
There is one other thing I want to throw out there, guys. With the advent this weekend, we have GP Santa Clara. This is most likely going to be coming out to you guys on Friday. But if you happen to listen to this on your way to GP Santa Clara, I am going to be there.
Yes, he
is. If you want to play some EDH, I'm more than happy to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It
seems also, if you have one of those play mats from the Ixalan Store Championship, I would also be interested.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Greg is not going to be shy about trying to trade for one of those Ixalan playmats. So find him. He'll find you if you don't.
But I'll let you be. I won't be that rude.
No. It sounds like a great time. Wish I could be there, but maybe next time. So, all right. Well, I know they can find you at GP Santa Clara, Greg. But if they want to get in touch with you to chat about anything else, where can they get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter at noobslasher2003.
And you can find me at Twitter at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. You can email us at thewincondition@gmail.com. You can check out our YouTube channel. We'll have a link in the show notes. And go ahead and spread the word. 2018 is a new year. We're looking to grow and bring all the wonderful things we can to you guys, and thanks again for listening. So,
yeah, we do appreciate it.
All that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Always a pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all next week.
Yeah. I'll have a good time.
Do-do-do. I have to remember to say the right thing this time, too.
Can you?
It's going to be, what is it? Hello again.
Hello and welcome to
back to the Win Condition Podcast, your home for lore, news, and brews in the MTG community. Your
community.
Your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic community.
I like it.
Okay. We'll run with it. Sounds
I'll
good.
Run with you.
Sounds more official. Okay. So we're gonna do intro, we'll do plugs, and then I want to do the resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go lore, new year, resolution. And then lore corner. And then we'll do news and announcements. So we're going to do previews for this section of news and announcements. So we'll Damn.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And we'll call it Through the Looking Glass. We're calling everything everything. Who gives a flying F? Whatever, it's our podcast. I don't care. All right.
Yes, exactly that. You got it.
Okay, all right. Here we go.